Ruthie. And I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can. But if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and lead a circle for us. They can have the Cadillac and T-Bud too. But give me my rocket bicycle for two. And that's today. It's Wednesday, April 5th. Thanks for tuning in to Out There. I have a live guest in the studio today, Pat James, who's the garden manager for Grow Food Northampton for the community gardens. Pat, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ruth. I'm glad to be here.
How is your day going so far?
It's going great. We have a movie coming up tonight, so we're popping popcorn in the office, in our new offices down the street from the radio station at 221 Pine Street.
In the Arts and Industry Building.
In the Arts and Industry Building. We're showing a movie called Seed. It's a documentary about seed saving around the world and the importance of seed saving in our current food systems and kind of screwy food systems, and why lots of indigenous and local folks are saving seed.
All right. That's tonight at 7? What floor? What's the room number?
349. Okay. We're on the third floor.
Is it on the... wall, is there like a, what do you call it, schedule, calendar, map, label, what do you call the thing when you go in a building and there's
a
like
directory.
A directory, that's it.
That's maybe, right. But go in the center door and go up the steps, you'll find us.
Smell for the popcorn.
Yeah, right.
All right, move that Seed, the Untold Story.
That's it, thank you.
So, Pat, can you tell a little bit about what the... Maybe can you tell a little bit about Grow Food, the big umbrella? Because
sure.
The community gardens is just one of the projects of Grow Food, right?
So, yes. So Grow Food Northampton started in about 2009 when several pieces of land, the last sort of rural farmland in Northampton city limits, came on the market. And a lot of residents were worried that maybe this land would get developed, not preserved. And so banded together under the leadership of people who are still involved in various ways with Grow Food Northampton to buy the land and preserve it as farmland, as agricultural land. The city played a huge role in making that possible. Trust for Public Lands played a huge role in making that possible. But really it was people on the ground deciding to save this land that made it possible. And so out of that came about a 140-acre parcel that includes Crimson and Clover Farm, a couple of other smaller farms that are on the parcel of land across from the new playing fields on Meadow Street, okay, or Spring Street. So that's where we're located, on Spring Street in Florence. And so this consortium of people got together and bought the land and then figured out really creative ways to put it to use as farmland and, you know, lucky for me, a big community garden.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a big fundraising effort to buy this land and keep it from development, right?
Huge fundraising effort. And, you know, usually nonprofits don't start that way with... You know, basically a gigantic capital campaign, but that's how Grow Food Northampton got started. And and in many ways, that's a big part of how we're sustained, because we had a large and generous donor base, many of whom still support us in really critical ways.
Lily Lombard was a key part of
right?
She
Lily
was, like,
was a huge part of that. and is now doing amazing tree work in the city. So watch the streets of Northampton start to become tree-lined again. Because if Lily has anything to say about it, that's what's going to happen.
Do you remember when you first heard about Grow Food Northampton?
I do, because I was just moving to the valley and I drove by the land that the garden was being built on. And I had been involved in community gardens in Philadelphia, where I was moving from, and thinking, I should check these people out. Mm-hmm. I want to find out about this. And so I kind of kept an eye on it. And I guess about a year after I moved here in 2012, and about a year later, I started working with Grow Food.
Did you have a community garden plot to start, or what was your initial involvement?
I didn't have a community garden plot to start. I'm very lucky that I have land to grow on where I live. And so I had that, but I had been involved in community gardening in Philadelphia in a pretty big way for about 3 or 4 years. I was the education director of the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, which sounds really like big deal, and it kind of was, but probably the most fun part of that was I was the administrator in charge of the people who help start and manage about 3,500 community gardens in Philadelphia and street tree programs in Philadelphia. And so I had a lot of sort of sitting in my office knowing a lot about what was going on, but kind of missing all the fun.
So then how did the job opening, the community garden manager position come up, or how did you hear about it, apply for it?
It started out as a volunteer coordinator position because the community gardeners are also volunteers in the garden. And so we needed a management strategy to do that. And that was at the point where, you know, Grow Food Northampton was being run by 1.5 staff and a bunch of volunteers. And they had just grown enough to take on another very part-time person. And that was me. And so as I became more acclimated to the organization and how we ran, my job then morphed into becoming the garden manager. And I feel extraordinarily lucky because I think it's the most fun job ever.
Oh, how can you describe some of the things that your job entails?
So, well, first of all, I get to work with gardeners, Ruthie, and gardeners are really pretty happy people. Except for this time of year. Gardeners this time of year are really pretty impatient people because they want to be doing something that the weather isn't quite allowing them to do yet. So right now I'm having a lot of communications with gardeners about, you know, when's the water going to get turned on? And it's sort of, well, when it stops freezing at night, that will be happening. And you know, is the ground thawed out yet? Yes, but really, really muddy right now. So, you know, it'll be a few more weeks and then, you know, everything will happen and people will be getting in their plots. We have about probably 50 to 75 new gardeners coming in this year.
And how many old ones, returning ones, or like how many plots?
So we have 275 plots and we're about to make a handful more. So we'll probably get up to 280, 285. I'm not quite sure yet. And in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 gardeners. So it's kind of a funny number. It's not a one-to-one ratio because some plots have two or three people working in them. And some individual people have one or two plots they're working with. So it's sort of hard to count how many people are actually involved in the garden. But, you know, if we said 350, we'd probably capture most of the people who will set foot in the garden this year and actually turn some earth over.
Wow, that's cool. So a big part of your job is just communications. And I know, you know, I've emailed you back and forth about, oh, can I have this plot? Oh, can I switch to that plot? Oh, can I have this plot? And I'm like, you must get bombarded with that kind of thing.
I do. But, you know, like I said, gardeners are generally a pretty happy group of people. So even when they don't get the exact plot they want, it's they're mostly kind of okay with, but I got another one and I'm happy to be gardening and I'll wait for the one I want. Things in a community garden move around, you know, so there will be, we have some people there who've been there since the very beginning. We're going into, I think it's our fifth season this year. And we've had people who've been there for a year and left. And this year we've got a few people who were here a year ago or here for a year, 2 or 3 years ago, and now they're coming back. So there's a lot of flux, but, you know, it's change in a happy place. And it's change in a place where a lot of people go because They're doing things that they need to do, like grow food, but also doing things that they want to do, like put their hands in dirt and calm down and be quiet and grow some things.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and Pat James is my guest here today, who's the director of the Florence Organic Gardens, the community gardens here in Florence. Pat, so there's two community gardens in Northampton, one up on Burt's Pit, the old one.
Yep.
And sometimes, do you have any thoughts on like comparing and contrasting the two?
We've learned a lot from that garden, and we've had gardeners who have come from that garden to our garden because they want to have an organic experience. So that's probably the main difference is that we...
Wait, when you say an organic experience, like there's lots of organic gardeners up on Burt's Pit, but you
there
mean
are lots
to be surrounded
of, oh,
by
there are
organic
lots
gardeners.
Of organic gardeners there, but in the grow food garden, it's a rule. So people have to abide by organic principles. And I'm aware that there are many people at the older garden on Burt's Pit Road that are using organic principles, and yay. And I think probably the what I've learned from registering people for the garden is that occasionally people think they've registered for our garden and they've registered for a plot there because we learned from them the same alphanumeric organizing system. So we have people coming in saying, well, I want plot E30. Or I have plot E30, but yeah, you have it in the other garden. So we managed to sort each other out. What a lot of people in both gardens don't know is that Grow Food Northampton is actually managed under the same system that the garden on Burt's Pit Road is managed through the rec department in Northampton. So we're technically a rec department program. We technically answer to them. We have more management capacity, so we do more of that on our own. I think that there's a lot to be said for cross-pollination between the two gardens. And I know that we've got gardeners who are gardening in both places because they can do slightly different things in each garden.
Yeah, I mean... my friend Ben, who's got a plot in each place, says that it's like hot and dry and sandy up there, up on Burt's Pit, and then down in the river plain down at the fog.
It's we're like, a floodplain.
Yeah, the floodplain. It's like wet, more wet and clay kind of silt soil.
Absolutely right. He's got that completely right.
I've heard that up at Burt's Pit, someone has to die for you to get a plot. Like, it's hard to get one there. I don't know if it's that difficult, but I have this sort of assumption or thought theory that, so what I've seen at the Fog, I've had a plot or two there for, I think, 4 years. I can't remember, 4 or 5. And so I've seen a lot of people come and go, a lot of new gardeners, I'm sure you've seen that. And so it seems like a community garden that's been around a long time, like Burt's Pit, it sort of weeds out those people who are going to stick and those who aren't. So I would imagine like the people that are there now, like they've been there a while. I mean, and so there's very little turnover.
I don't actually know. I mean, a friend of mine who wanted to get a plot there recently did pretty easily. So But I would suspect that because they've been around longer, there's probably a little more inside knowledge, I suppose, with older gardeners about if a new plot is coming online and do they want to get it. And one of the rule differences is that you're allowed at that garden to have more than 2 plots per person. We have a rule that allows up to 2 plots per person. And then stop. So, that might make a difference. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the things that's changing in our garden is that we've got kind of coming online a pretty robust group of gardeners who've been around for a while who have formed an advisory committee with me to kind of look at those things and to think about what are the policies that we have in place that we need to change or upgrade? What are the ones we want to keep? You know, what's working? You know, if it ain't broke... break, no.
In terms of new gardeners, like you see gardeners come and not really make it through the season. Have you noticed any patterns where you're like, I don't think this person's going to make it? What kind of support can we offer them?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, one of the things I would say is that if you've had a baby in the last 6 months, don't start a new garden. It's just the wrong time. And, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound anti-baby or anti-parent, but I just know that the people who have come in who are new parents, regardless of what their situation is in terms of childcare, are just tired.
Yeah.
And maybe thinking that a 20 by 20 plot is easier than it sounds to maintain over the course of a summer. You know, it's one of those things that a lot of community gardens face is how do we support parents?
Uh-huh.
And particularly, how do we support parents of young children to come in? You know, we occasionally get students who are currently students or recently students, so young, as in that stereotype of young right out of college, who maybe are not real experienced gardening and, you know, have the how hard could it be thought in their heads. You know, so they need a little bit of coaching. And fortunately, we've got a lot of really seasoned gardeners who are willing to be on call to, you know, we've experimented with various kind of mentoring programs or ask a gardener or put a sign on your plot if you're willing to help other gardeners, that kind of thing. But it really happens much more in a much, it usually happens in a kind of neighborly way. Like if the person in the plot next to you is struggling a little bit, you might reach out and say, you know, can I give you some advice or can I help you out with such and such? Or you might want to look at those stripedy bugs on your potatoes and maybe take them off. Yeah.
In terms of young people and age, is there any like lower age limit on who can get a plot?
16. Okay. And at 16 with a parent co-signing for you. So if you're in high school or if you're in that age group, you could conceivably get a plot. And it's mainly that we've established that number mainly because we have power tools. So people use mowers, and because of liability issues, we need people under the age of 18 to be using mowers with parental consent and or supervision or something like that. We had a young person who actually wanted to mow. I love that.
Yeah, great. Get some more young people.
Right. You know, so we had to work all that out. But, you know, so we welcome it, and it takes a little bit more support to make sure that that's happening well.
Cool. Well, I want to play a song, a familiar song. I want to play the garden song. This is by Dave Mallett. Dave Mallett's singing it. And this is Out There. And I'm Ruthie Woodring, and Pat James is here talking about Grow Food Northampton, the community gardens that she's the director of.
Inch by inch and row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch and row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rains come and tumble them down. And pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my own, cause the time is close at hand. And grain for grain, sun and rain, find my way in nature's chain. And tune my body and my brain to the music from the land. Inch by inch and row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch and row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rains that you rose straight and long. Temper them with prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. An old crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. And in my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief up there. Garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch and row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sow. Someone warmed them from below till the rains come tumbling down.
So we're back to talking with Pat James about the community gardens in Florence. I was wondering, Pat, a little bit about the financials. Like, how much does it cost to get a plot?
It costs $33 a year. And if you're a senior citizen, it's $25. And if you're low income, it's $8. And if you're low income or a senior citizen, you also get 5 5-gallon buckets of free, amazingly delicious compost when you register.
And free wood chips too, right?
And a lot of free wood chips. We have a lot of those.
Yeah, can you talk about some of the amenities at the farm, like the compost and the wood chips, the hedgerows?
Yeah, so everybody gets a plot that's either 20 by 20 feet or 20 by 10 feet. And they have access to the gardener shed, which has basically all of the tools you're going to need. Except maybe if you want a few little hand tools. I think they're still in the garden someplace. If we had a metal detector, we'd find them. But so you've got to bring your own like little hand tools. But, you know, for rakes, spades, digging implements, all kinds of things.
What do you call that digger thing you stand on and tilt back?
I'll think of it in a minute.
Spaced out on it. Caller. I'm sure some listener knows. Call in.
It's a fork.
It's the broad fork.
Thank you. That took two of us.
I was going to have to answer the phone there for a minute.
Whoa. Yeah. So it's the broad fork. Wheelbarrows, carts. We have water at the garden, and that's part of what the plot fee pays for, is that we have Northampton City water. Which we use very carefully, hoses and watering cans. And then amenities at the garden also include, so the garden is divided up into neighborhoods, and every neighborhood has a picnic table in it with what remains kind of small but thriving little fruit trees next to each of the picnic tables. Mm-hmm. And there is a edible hedgerow, which is just, you know, one of our amazing garden volunteers, really did a big restoration on project on that last
Paige,
year.
Right?
Yay, Paige.
Yeah.
And it looks fabulous. Mm-hmm. We have the only composting toilet in Northampton, which I when I introduce it to new gardeners, I call this the sweetest smelling outhouse in Western Massachusetts, because it is. And we also have a bramble patch where people can go and pick blackberries and raspberries and black raspberries and so forth. And hidden in there, I actually didn't find this till my second year in the garden, there's actually a little gooseberry patch too.
Oh, I know.
I know.
I filled my freezer with them and I had them for breakfast today.
I think people kept that a little bit of a secret. But they're good. Yeah, I don't ever manage to get any of them home. I manage to sit down and eat quite a few of them during the season.
Yeah, they're for the brave who don't mind the thorns.
Right. So we have, and then we have community bins. So free wood chips for anybody who wants them. And these are pretty clean wood chips. The man who supplies us, you know, knows not to bring in diseased wood. And so it's pretty good shape. It's pretty clean. There's not much rot. And it's good. We don't recommend it for a lot of mulching, but for paths in your gardens, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. If you're doing sheet mulching with cardboard, it's pretty good for holding down the cardboard. We also, several times a year, will bring in loads of cardboard for people from various local importers who have lots and lots of boxes to give us. Uh-huh. And then this amazingly delicious compost from Bear Hill Compost that has just, it's just lovely, lovely. You could almost eat it. You wouldn't even have to grow vegetables in it. It's so good. You could just eat it direct. I don't recommend that, but it's very good. It's very nice.
Where are the wood chips from?
Tim.
Tim. All right. Tim.
Tim. Yeah, he's an arborist. Uh-huh. So he's somebody who's taking care of trees. And I'm sorry, I don't know his last name, but
that's all right.
He brings us wood chips on a regular basis.
That's cool. Oh, and also there's a nut grove too, right?
And there's a nut grove. Thank you for reminding me.
Still in its infancy or adolescence.
Very much in its infancy, and it's readapting to a new location. It was a little bit close to the Giving Garden, which I also want to tell you about. You know, many people know this, but nut trees give out a chemical that makes it hard to grow around them.
Like the black walnuts in particular?
Black walnuts in particular, but a lot of nut trees do it. So we moved it a little bit farther away from the Giving Garden. So you want me to talk about the Giving Garden?
Yeah, but before you do, I would just want to remind listeners that if you want to call in with any questions for Pat, you can call in 585-1033. I don't know that I can put you on the air, but I can certainly relay your question. That's 585-1033. So tell us about the Giving Garden.
So the Giving Garden started as a project of gardeners right when the garden began, and it functioned in one 20 by 20 plot, and then it grew to take on parts of other plots until 2 years ago when we got a great grant from Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Foundation. Which helped with a number of our food access programs, including the Giving Garden. And we expanded to take over about half an acre alongside the community garden. And so in a typical year, which would be this year, we would go out to St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Soup Kitchen, Mana Soup Kitchen, the Survival Center, East Hampton Community Center, and a few other partners and say, what would you like? Mm-hmm. And so our growing plan is based very much on what our community partners say that their clients want and eat, will eat and will cook and so forth. So that's our planting plan for this year. And last year, out of that really small piece of land, we pulled about 6,000 pounds of food out and delivered it to local partners. Mostly because of help from volunteers, both people from the garden and people from the community who want to volunteer.
Uh-huh. And also, I'm so spaced out on her name, who did the Giving Garden last year.
Carla.
Oh, yeah, Carla.
Carla led the Giving Garden last year, an extraordinary farmer. Yeah. And we have another extraordinary farmer leading it this year, Diego. And he's a Mass Lift AmeriCorps member. Uh-huh. Who's running the garden, but also a young man from the area who has a degree in agriculture and really knows what he's doing and is picking up from Carla's lead from last year.
Yeah, Carla. But I just want to recognize Carla Schaefer a little bit more because she put an incredible amount of work, energy, and her life passion into it.
Yeah,
and did a
she's
great
an extraordinary
job.
Farmer. Yeah.
Yeah. So Diego, talk a little bit about him? What's his job?
Diego is the Giving Garden manager this year.
So he'll decide what to, well, he'll follow the direction of the end users and determining what to plan.
So he went with me when we met with all the end users and asked them what they wanted. And kept careful notes. He's working a lot from Carla's planting plan from last year and developing his own. We grew a few things last year that either were not that successful from our perspective or weren't that wanted in the places that we were taking them. So we've cut those back and added a few things.
Like what?
Well, so we grew these amazing, delicious, sweet little cherry tomatoes.
I wonder if you're going to say
they
that.
Were
I remember.
So good.
Yeah, I remember
they were
picking
so
those.
Good.
Yeah.
But they were a pain to pick.
Yeah.
And they, when we got them to the various places, they were hard for the people to figure out a good way to distribute them. Because they don't keep real long.
Yeah.
And so people said, we want tomatoes. We liked the cherry tomatoes, but really not so much. And so while we enjoyed picking and eating them, and it ended up, you know, if you figured out the cost per pound of the cherry tomatoes, they ended up being really expensive compared to standard sized tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had good luck with the cherry tomatoes in terms of light resistance. And I actually ended up canning cherry tomatoes last year from my and Duane's plots, because that was like the only tomatoes. Well, that was like the ones that did the best, but you're right. It's so time-consuming, labor-consuming. So in terms of money, how do you raise money for like your salary or all the supplies? Some comes from gardener fees.
Some comes from gardener fees, which don't quite cover the actual costs of managing the garden. A lot of it comes from individual donors. We're very lucky that way, and we encourage people to continue to support us.
Like from fundraising appeals?
Fundraising appeals. When you get that letter from Grow Food Northampton every year, it's us. And it's the cool part about it is that we've grown in kind of a mindful way. So while our budget has grown, it's also meant that it's enabled us to feed many, many, many more people. Not just in the community garden, but through our food access programs. And that's made a huge difference because a lot of the gardeners have also been involved in them. But it's brought a huge amount of awareness of food insecurity in the valley and helped people recognize that there are really tangible, concrete things we can do to turn a kind of peculiar food system on its head. You know, now we have this food system where if you want fresh organic produce in most communities, you've got to be rich to be able to buy it. And here we're supporting many, many families to be able, through SNAP programs and through the community garden and through food that's going to the survival center, to get fresh, sustainably grown produce in their kitchens.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Anything else about food access programs, or does that sort of cover it?
Well, one of the more fun things that we do every year is that we have a senior share program. So we take food from Crimson and Clover Farm, that's part of this, that's our CSA, and that goes to the senior center. This year it'll be going for 15 weeks, and starting in July, and seniors will get a small share each week. It'll cost each person in the program who's eligible a buck or two a week to get a share of food.
That's like, how is that possible?
Well, because it's possible because of donors, because we've raised money so that we can subsidize it, so the farmer gets paid. But we want to make sure that the farmers are getting paid and that people are getting good food. And through the fundraising, we're able to do both. Mm-hmm. And we do a similar program starting in the fall. It'll start the first week of school. And we're hoping to, we piloted it last year at Jackson Street School. It was called the Red Bag Program because all the food was in red bags. Uh-huh. And, it's a similar kind of thing where it's a fall and winter share going out to families for 10 weeks. And again, it's costing the families a buck or two a week.
Wow. That's amazing.
And the kids are carrying the bags home to their families. They're very energized about that.
Yeah. I think I'm going to take another break, music break, and play the request from Pat Woodstock, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Well, I came upon the child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, "Tell me, where are you going?" And he told me,
That was actually, song was actually by Joni Mitchell. CSNY was doing a cover of it. And if you want to hear more songs like that from that generation, listen to Dwayne's show. Thanks for calling in, Dwayne.
Join me, Dwayne Rennie, every Friday from 2 to 4. Rock down memory lane with music from the 70s, only here on Valley Free Radio.
Fix your bike, how to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it. Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue,
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
All right, we're back to Out There. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and Pat James is the director of the Florence Organic Gardens and Grow Food Project. Did I say that right?
Grow Food Northampton Organic Community Garden. A lot of the original gardeners, and Ruthie's one of them, calls it the Fog because it was originally called the Florence Organic Garden. But we've decided that all of our projects ought to have the same name. So
okay.
That's why the sign changed.
Thanks for clarifying that. I was obviously in a fog about it. I didn't realize the name had changed. It's always going to come in a jumble.
Right. And when you say fog, I know what you mean. Hi, Dwayne. Thank you for calling. Mm-hmm. Dwayne's also a great gardener.
Those cherry tomatoes that I was talking about that I canned, those were mostly from Dwayne's plot, courtesy of, Dwayne and his uncle. Let's see. So opening day will be coming up soon for the garden? Yes, or... Is there an opening day? Sometimes there's like an opening day.
There's an opening work day coming up at the end of this month. Whatever the last Saturday is, I think it's the 23rd of April.
30 days.
Yes. Yes. And it's an opening work day. So we're inviting people to come in Okay.
And no, it's the 29th.
Whatever.
It's the 29th. That's Arbor Day, right?
Could be.
I think so. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Could be. It might be the 22nd. Anyway,
okay.
Check with me or check with the website. At the end of the month, we're having an opening work party. So it's not a garden-wide opening, but we will be clearing plots for new gardeners. So all of you new gardeners out there, come on down.
So there'll be a community effort to clear the plots for individual new gardeners.
Yeah,
really nice.
Yeah, we're clearing some ground so that they can get in there. Okay. I think one of the hardest things about being a new gardener, getting a new plot, is breaking ground.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're making that part a little bit easier.
Yeah, I remember the first year that I got my plot, and it was a rough field out there.
We should be calling y'all the sod busters.
So there's a lot of work that needs to happen, like mowing grass and sharpening tools.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work get divvied up?
So every person who has a plot owes 3 hours of community service to the garden during the season per plot. So if you have one plot, you owe 3 hours of community service. Mm-hmm. And basically, with the number of gardeners we have, almost everything gets done. Mm-hmm. I'd have to do a little... rounding up to get people to remember to do some of the tasks that we need to get done.
Yeah.
But people are really pretty good about it and have recently come to understand, now that we really have to be aggressive about going out for funding, given the current climate is changing and, any kind of supports we might have had from government places that we had a lot, but they're gone. Mm-hmm. People are beginning to understand that every volunteer hour that they put in with Grow Food Northampton really translates into dollars for us, because it means a staff person isn't doing it. It means valuable work is getting done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last year at the end of the season, there was the email that went out saying, hey, if you haven't finished doing your 3 hours of community service, then pay us some money.
Yeah. So people had an option to do a buyout if they wanted to. We really wrestled with that because, that's an option rooted in a certain amount of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's also work that one way or another needs to get done and needs to get paid for.
Yeah.
So that kind of helped, actually. Yeah. And a few people did that, and a few people decided they didn't want to do that and finished up their hours.
Yeah. Speaking of privilege, I'm interested in what issues of privilege and access do you see around who can have a community garden plot? What have you seen in your years there? And how has Grow Food worked to be inclusive?
Well, one of the biggest issues is in terms of having a community garden plot is time to have a community garden plot. And that kind of cuts both ways. So people who have full-time jobs and full-time families may not have time to have a full-time community garden plot. But mm-hmm. what a lot of people do is then they share a plot with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can share labor and share time, and during busy times or light times, alternate who gets to do what. We continue to do a lot of thinking about people who don't have financial resources but want a garden, because we know people in our garden live off a lot of the food that they grow and that it's made a difference in their grocery bills. So we want to make that possible. And I don't know that we've ever turned a gardener away for lack of ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we have people in our community who might not be able to produce a lot of the paperwork that other folks would ask you to produce to say, I'm poor.
Uh-huh.
we take your word for it. Uh-huh. If you say you are, you probably are, and you probably need it. So we want to provide a lot of supports for people who need to get into the garden and be able to grow their own food. You know, we have a lot of seeds left over from the seed swap that we had at the beginning of March. Those will be made available to new gardeners coming in. And when we get seed donations, which happens from time to time from seed producers, those go to the gardeners who are really looking for ways to get established without a lot of money involved.
Mm-hmm. It seems like Grow Food has also reached out to Spanish-speaking people in the community.
This has been one of the most wonderful parts of being part of this organization. So for the last 3 years, one of our members has hosted a house party and invited members of mostly coming through Families with Power, which is based at Jackson Street School, and has an outreach with a lot of Spanish-speaking families, but also a lot of recent immigrants. And so they've been really instrumental in helping us bring people into the garden who might not have otherwise known about it. And so we've become really, really mindful about making sure that most of our major communications are translated. You know, the garden manual's translated. All of the signs in the garden are English and Spanish. And we want to just make sure that people feel like this is a place that they can come and be a neighbor.
Yeah, I mean, the translations in the Spanish is good, not just for the Spanish-speaking people, but for the English-speaking people to learn a little more Spanish.
Yeah.
Assuming they're translated well.
Well, I have a fantasy that Santa, the gardener who hosts our outreach programs, would be willing. She's a Spanish teacher at Holyoke Community College. And I have this fantasy that we'd have a Spanish in the garden class this summer with Santa. But she's kind of busy, so we'll see.
Yeah, that's cool. I have some other stray questions. So when you were talking about the food donations, it just made me think about the complete cycle of food. There is a composting toilet there permitted by the Board of Health and all, which is awesome. What about compost, like food scraps? So are you allowed to bring compost from your home kitchen scraps bucket to your community garden plot?
No, really not so much.
Yeah.
You're allowed to bring finished compost. But, you know, we're on the edge of woods and the Mill River Greenway, and it's a pretty sure bet that if you brought partially composted food into your garden plot, critters would get it before it ever had a chance to compost.
Wait, but what about all the food that's falling off the vine and the plants?
Well, critters are eating those too.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah, they're eating those too. I mean, that's one of the challenges of having a big community organic garden is that we have a lot of company out there. So we're trying not to encourage people to bring, although I suppose if somebody wanted to dig a deep hole and put their food scraps in there, that would probably work. It would be something for my advisory committee to explore more.
Yeah. Do you know of models or like in Philadelphia or other places that you've heard of where people are bringing offsite home scraps?
Well, deep digging has been mostly it, where they're, you know, they're digging down a foot and a half, 2 feet and burying and then gardening over top of that.
Yeah. Oh, that just makes me think of, I know there's a lot of compost collection services by bike who are taking it to community gardens to be composted, but and I'm assuming those are well maintained, like those aren't like individual plots or like little compost piles in each plot. It's like, okay, this is a composting system and we're on top of it.
Yeah Actually, New York City has an amazing bike composting system that a landscape designer named T. Flesher created. So this is a little bit off topic, but he was the guy that brought back Battery Park after 9/11 when it was essentially dead. And so he created a bicycle compost system in Lower Manhattan, which he composted inside a factory building. And he uses only organic methods to manage that park. So if you ever get to New York, when you get to New York, take a look at Battery Park and look at how beautiful it is and know that it's all organically managed.
No, there's actually like, I don't know, like a lot. I want to say maybe 100 or so sites around New York City where there's small scale composting going on. I was at a compost conference last year where someone did a presentation about it, but I'm kind of spacing on it. And it was through the Arboretum or something like that.
Maybe New York Botanic Garden.
The Botanic Gardens. Yeah, yeah. Words. The words are a tangle. Yeah, is there anything else that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about yet? You should plug the film again tonight.
Well, so the movie tonight is Seed, the Untold Story, and it's a story about seed saving and its critical importance in both biodiversity and our food system in the world. And it talks about some of the heroes of seed saving around the world. So I have not seen the film. I have heard from other gardeners that it's highly inspiring.
So that's tonight, Wednesday at 7 at the Grow Food Northampton offices at 221 Pine Street in the Arts and Industry Building.
Thank you, Ruthie.
And there's popcorn.
Lots
of popcorn.
Locally grown organic popcorn.
Dwayne, I'm going to be there. Also, aren't there some interns typically, like from Smith College or somewhere there?
Oh, we have the best interns on the planet. So we have Sophie and Serena, both students at Smith College this year, who've been with us for all of the past year and will be leaving us in May. We're very sad. And we're looking for interns to come in this summer, you know, to work with us on a more full-time basis over the summer. So we're looking for an intern to work in the Giving Garden, an intern to work in the Community Garden, and an intern to work on sort of all over the organization doing communications and outreach.
Now, does an intern mean they get paid or Smith College pays them?
Smith College pays them, yeah. Right.
Or they get paid, but...
They get paid, but yeah. Not by us.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We wish we could, but alas and alack.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to wrap up the show. I got another song I want to play. Also, I want to announce that this Saturday, April 8th in downtown Florence, it's the 175th anniversary of the Northampton Association of Education and Industry, a radical utopian community and important part of the Underground Railroad. That's Saturday from like 10 to 2 or 4. There's events going on all day.
All day, yeah.
Yeah, the David Ruggles Museum. You can find more information if you look up David Ruggles.
And did you know that the community garden was part of the land that group grew on? Yeah.
Was it like a community gardens kind of at that time?
No, they had this visionary idea, because remember, this is pre-Civil War. They had this visionary idea that we ought to be able to produce crops without slave labor. And so they wanted to produce silk from silkworms and sugar from sugar beets. And they proved that it was possible. They were really not set up to be a farming community, but they proved that it was possible.
Uh-huh. Were there a bunch of mulberry trees down there? I mean, I know there's some scattered.
There were. I don't know what the whole story is, but that's why people should go to the events on Saturday, because the story is there and it's compelling.
Cool. Also, another event coming up on April 17th is 16th. I think it's 16th. No, it's the 17th, Patriots Day. Some people may be filing taxes. I just want to mention war tax resistance and choosing where you want your tax money to go. If you don't always necessarily have to pay it, you can say, well, of course the feds will come after you, but you can say, no, I don't want this going to these causes I don't believe in, so I'm going to give them to causes I do believe in. Anyway, the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee is a good website with all kinds of helpful information on that. And Patriots Day, there's going to be a march starting at, I want to say, Bridge Street School. I forget. To resist war. And I think that's it. Stay up. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Out There. I'm Ruthie Woodring. Pat James has been here with me today from Grow Food
Northampton. Thanks, Ruthie. This has been fun.
All right. This is Kristen Limbs.
I am a farmer. I've been one. The plow and hoe left the raised two children, and they are farmers too. A crop and garden every year we grew. 200 acres ain't no easy haul, but it's a good life, no regrets at all. When Joe turned 50, his back was acting up. We three took over so he could rest up. My Joe was buried where his daddy lies, and soon some men came asking for my prize. I said, I live here, and here I'm gonna stay. What makes you think I wanna move away? They smiled real sly, said, now your farmer's dead. The farm ain't yours till you pay the overhead. I know we women, we ain't been, but we're no fools as far as farming goes. The crop don't know no woman's work or man's. There ain't no law can take me from my land. 'Cause I'm a farmer, I've been one all my life. Call me a farmer. This is not